Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Well, hello everyone from the tropical rainforest, literally, of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson, and you are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this magical network that we call Blog Talk Radio as we endure this tropical-like weather today. Here in the jungles of Indiana, it was 103. About an hour ago, the sun was setting, and it was still 97 degrees, so my Lord, what a summer we've endured. So it's going to be interesting to see what the rest of the month of July and August. Oh, my goodness, it's going to be something else. As always, handling the technical responsibilities, our studio producer, Melissa Hovey, technical engineer, Wayne Larson, music provided by our musical guru, Scott Carney. And from the massive Wild World News Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, the honorable, distinguished, and always humble, and always on time, by the way, Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Well, good evening, Mr. Batson. Have you got your ice cube underwear on tonight?
No, but I have a frog in my throat I need to get rid of. excuse
one
me.
One of those wood frogs. Well, we have been enduring the last couple of weeks.
Well, I'll tell you what I did. What I did right before the broadcast began is I just filled my underwear filled with ice cubes.
I thought
and
so.
It's a little chilly, but it is quite comfortable as we sit in my studios here in West Central Indiana.
As my grandfather always used to say, it's hotter than a steel bench in a nudist colony.
Did he really say that?
Oh yeah.
The following portion of Larry Batson's Wild World is brought to you by Alphabet Swamp, the new children's book by Cheryl and Larry Batson. Order your autographed copy today at Now write this down. Don't forget, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, or send check or money order for $10 per copy to WES, 4140 North 600 West, Greencastle, Indiana. 46135. Shipping and handling is included.
It's now time from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
Good evening. This is Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News for July 5th.
That was rude.
Now, for our listeners in Alaska, keep us posted on this next story. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game says it's receiving reports from sport fishermen that the halibut they're catching are mushy.
Ooh.
Yeah. Now, the reports are coming in from all over Cook Inlet, prompting tests to determine what might be causing the problem. Mushy halibut. Now, are they not cooking the fish first? What's going on here?
You mean when they pick them up or bringing them out of the ocean, they're mushy?
I'm assuming that it's after the fish are cooked. Now, the Department of Fish and Game says that the fish are safe to eat. They're just mushy.
Well, it's because they're not eating them. That's why.
Because they're mushy. All right, for the love of whales, Atlanta, Georgia. Now, the Georgia Aquarium has applied for a permit to bring 18 beluga whales into the U.S. to improve the condition of the mammals in captivity.
Beluga.
Now, the move is part of a three-year conservation program to improve the genetic diversity of captive belugas. Now, the whales will be housed in aquariums and zoological parks around the United States.
Well.
So they're mixing up the whales for a little whale love to try to help the a genetic diversity.
Well, good luck with that.
That sounds like a really big job.
My neighbors tried that. It didn't work out for them at all.
Huh. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. All right. Well, they don't have to be blue anymore. Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, the Miami blue butterfly has received endangered species status from the state as well as the federal government. Now, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission put the butterfly on the state's endangered species list. The action follows a similar decision by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Well.
So they don't have to be blue anymore, but they're still going to be. All right, well, they're not kidding in Port Angeles, Washington. Reports of aggressive mountain goats have prompted Olympic National Forest officials to close a popular trail on Mount Eleanor for the last couple of weeks. Now, the goats have been approaching the hikers along the trails there.
That would suck. Imagine a goat charging you up here on the side of a mountain.
Exactly. Now, what? I wonder what's... That's kind of an unusual thing.
Probably sick of the tourists.
Didn't that happen a few years ago? Wasn't there a gentleman that was actually killed by one of these things?
Yes,
cool.
That's true.
Huh. Wow. I hadn't heard that.
I guess
what a way
to
go.
I'm sure that actually happened.
I wonder what they put on his tombstone. The old goat killed by a goat?
Butthead. All right. Let's get on with this. All right, now, because of the heat all across the U.S., biologists are saying that a lack of moisture is reducing the insect populations, causing algae blooms that can kill fish, and forcing nocturnal animals to come out during the day in search of water. Now, the drought's impact on fish and wildlife populations might not be evident for 2 to 5 years because conditions now will affect reproductive cycles.
Huh. Well, I can definitely see a difference the way our animals react to this hot weather. They sleep longer. Me too.
Well, I would like to. All right, our local news. The Indianapolis Zoo has welcomed a new addition to its elephant herd, a little girl. Now, weighing in at a healthy 244 pounds, the female calf was born last Thursday night. Now, the calf joins the zoo's 7 other elephants already in existence there, in residence there at the park, the zoo park.
Well.
Now, the public will be able to participate in the naming of the new elephant in the next few weeks.
Wonder what dumb name they'll come up with.
Well, its mother's name was Ivory.
Oh, that's okay, I guess.
So maybe
usually they come up with some silly African name that nobody can pronounce or understand. Or
usually, well, we'll have to see. I will keep you posted on this one.
I'd like to contribute to that, to tell you the truth. You know, what about Bill or Wayne or what?
Yeah.
What sex is it?
It's a female.
Oh, well, they can still call it. They can call it Waynette.
I like that, Waynette.
Well, there we go.
All right, now help me out with this story. Bonner's Ferry, Idaho, U.S. Geological Survey scientists are gathering bear hair along the mountainous Idaho-Montana border to document grizzlies. Now listen to this, in a 2.4 million acre study area stretching from the Canadian border to Sandpoint in Idaho and Thompson Falls in Montana.
Wow.
Collecting bear hair.
How many acres?
2.4 million.
Lord. That's a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of area to cover.
Yeah. And now here's a problem I have. If it's a bear hair, it wouldn't be there, right?
Bear hair wouldn't be there. Yeah. Okay.
If it's bear hair, it wouldn't be there.
Right.
All right, I'll give up on that one.
Yeah.
All right, now here's a good way to get the kids outside. Louisville, Kentucky. The Kentucky High School Athletic Association has added bass fishing as a sanctioned sport.
Oh!
Yeah, now the first season will be next spring, but there are no indications yet as to how many schools will form teams. Now, Kentucky became the second state to add bass fishing as a high school sport, following Illinois.
That's a good idea.
That's a great idea, and I guess it kind of makes sense because you usually find fish in schools, don't you?
Well, yes, you do. Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Before we end the wild world news tonight, the next time you take a shower, I want you to think about the Romans. Now, the Romans didn't use soap. They would, to get rid of sweat and grime and dirt, they would cover themselves with oil and then scrape off the oil with a special scraper made of metal, wood, or bone called a strigal. Huh. Yeah. All right. Well, no, thank you. But anyway, that's the Wild World News for July 5th.
I have an added statistic to add to your Wild World News tonight, Dr. Day.
Please.
Do you know that more people are killed annually by coconuts falling out of trees than shark attacks?
No, but I've been hit by coconuts before. I can see that.
That explains it all.
Yep.
Once again, a great job done by Dr. Henry Day and his Wild World News staff in Indianapolis, Indiana. We always appreciate the great efforts they put forth for us every Thursday night. We invite everyone to listen to our program after the initial broadcast. It's available absolutely free of charge at Blog Talk Radio. The easiest way, just simply Google Larry Batson, Wild World, and all the shows will come up. We want to tell everyone to check out my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, and our Facebook page, Larry the Animal Guy and Friends, filled with photos and information about our animal family, also RadioMom.fm, and the home of the Radio Mom Shop, where you can save 50, 60, 70% on vacations, restaurants, and a variety of other goods and services. And why not listen to my show, just like Melissa Hovey and Wayne Larson do every Sunday, the 70s on Sunday, 12 to 7, at RadioMom.fm. Also, McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado. And no, Estes Park is not on fire. Rocky Mountain is great. It is on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park. We call it God's Country. Go to their website, info@McGregorMountainLodge.com. Those are a few of our underwriters that make it very, very possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio. Godfather passed away just this afternoon, so we received a call from her management saying Dee Dee was just a little bit down in the dumps, and you can't blame her for that. We'll not be able to be on the show tonight if there's any way possible. And I said, we absolutely appreciate where she's coming from, and sure, it's no problem. And she'll be back with us in 2 weeks, so I'll learn the soundtrack, and I won't talk out of turn. But we were so honored to have Dee Dee Sharp. She will be on, and it's going to be a great week. So that's 2 weeks from tonight here on Larry Batson's Wild World. And I have to say that tonight's program, we're just Dr. Day, Dr. Henry Day, and myself just shooting the breeze for an hour and with some contributions.
That's pretty scary.
it's very scary.
But let me apologize for that little song snafu there.
What happened?
It's actually 5 minutes.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, it is.
Oh.
I heard you talk, so I backed the volume down there real quick.
Oh, I see. Well,
that's all right. But let me reiterate there. Let me clarify what Dr. Day, one of his killer mountain goat stories he had there right at the beginning. There was a gentleman in the October of 2010 in the Olympic National Park that was killed by a mountain goat.
Ooh.
I did find a story online.
Wow.
And apparently it just went crazy, and these guys were eating lunch. There was a gentleman and a couple ladies that were eating lunch, and this thing just crept in and acted aggressive, and he told the ladies to leave, and apparently this thing attacked him after the ladies left. They tried to resist. They got back to the scene to no avail.
Huh. Wow.
So apparently you can't trust a mountain goat either.
Well, that's right. I think we did report on that story a couple of years ago.
Yeah, Dr. Day, I think you are correct on that. I do remember you reading some of that story.
Wow. Well.
Kind of crazy when you think about it. It's just a goat.
Yes, but they're quite powerful. And, you know, where they hang out, the slightest error, you plummet to your death. So that would be, what a way to go, Dr. Day.
Boy, I know. Over the years, all the animals that we've handled and dealt with, that would not be fun.
You know, it brings me back to the story of our good friend Yellowstone Park Ranger Bob Jackson telling us about when grizzly bears actually kill their human victims, that they hold them down while they're still alive and start eating them at the stomach area. And I've relayed that to several folks, and I always get that same look on their face. Like,
well, yeah.
Oh, God, what a way to go.
We should have Bob on again, because what a storyteller.
Who is that?
Bob Jackson.
Oh, Bob Jackson?
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, did I ever tell you about my encounter with a buffalo on a lawn tractor?
Not sure.
Or should I put it, be more clear, a John Deere lawn tractor?
So we're talking a buffalo and a deer.
A buffalo and a John Deere.
Oh, John Deere, okay.
Yeah, well, I was about 20 years old, and I worked for a gentleman who imported exotic animals. We had everything and anything, and he was based in Bloomington, Indiana. And he had a farm just on the outskirts of Bloomington, and one time he said that one of the guys out there wasn't able to cut the grass, and he asked if I'd be willing to do it. Well, I thought anything to get me outside and going out to his farm would be great, because I knew he had all the buffalo out there. So I climb on this John Deere tractor, you know, and I'm just mowing away, not really thinking about it, and I look over the side of the fence, and all the hired hands are like waving their hands, and they're screaming and hollering, and I think, what in the world are they doing? So I happen to look around over my shoulder, and gosh, probably about 30 yards away was this male buffalo they called Abe, who had his head down, was in full tilt run toward my lawn tractor. So
and
I shifted
about the size of a minivan.
About the size of a minivan. So I think I had it probably third gear. Well, I shifted it up to fifth gear, and I accelerated as fast as I could. And this was a pretty good running little John Deere. And I was bouncing across this field with this buffalo right behind me. I'm thinking, oh, what a way to die. So finally I decided there was no way that the buffalo was eventually going to catch me. So I looked over my shoulder, and I could pretty much, when I looked over my shoulder, all I saw was buffalo. And I dove off that tractor, and the tractor kept going, and the buffalo followed it. And he literally destroyed the tractor. And it turns out that that particular buffalo had been at an Indiana State Park, in fact, Brown County State Park, and they had gotten rid of it because it hated cars and the sound of a running engine, and it would attack the cars and completely destroy them. So the state got sick of paying for claims for the buffalo, so they just shipped it over to my friend.
And he failed to tell you that.
He failed to tell me that. At the time, I saw little humor in it.
I bet, because that's a big head to be butted by.
Oh, my gosh. Well, a friend of my dad's was vacationing in Glacier National Park, and they hit a buffalo in their station wagon, the kind that has wood on the side, and it completely totaled it. I mean, it was just like wiped out.
And the buffalo?
Then we were, no, the buffalo survived. It did fine. The car was completely totaled. Then we were in Rocky Mountain National Park one time, and we're driving around the park. It's late at night. We're viewing elk. You know, the elk are everywhere. They're in all the valleys. They're hanging out in the roads and so forth. And so we're getting ready to go back to our campsite, and it turned dark. It was, you know, pitch black. And about that time, we're going down these roads, and here comes a kid on a motorcycle. And he comes bopping around us. He passes us. He's going down the road just fast as that little motorcycle would go. And we're thinking, God, that's just not smart. And sure enough, we got down the road maybe another half mile, and there he was, motorcycle, guy, spread all over the road. I mean, he'd hit an elk, and when we got to him, he was alive. He just had stuff broken. He thought he'd hit a brown brick wall. I mean, it was like, it was not good. But you know how that goes.
Yes, let me tell you one of my stories. When I was stationed in El Paso at the lovely Fort Bliss, I used to go into Carlsbad, New Mexico, for the bat flights during the summer. And if there was a full moon on my way back to the big city of El Paso, it was you could see better if you turned your lights out and used the reflectors in the middle of the highway to guide yourself. Well, I had the lights out, and I'm cruising through the desert, no traffic, and I come up over this hill, and I kind of see something in the road. Well, it's about 17 mule deer. So I lock up the car, I lock the wheels up. I'm sliding down the middle of the highway, and I slide right up sideways to right next to these mule deer, and I'm probably about 8 feet away from them. And they just stand there looking at me like, oh, well, where the hell did you come from? What are you doing out here? And, yeah, they didn't move. They didn't do anything. I literally had to turn the lights on, honk the horn to get them out of the road. And I'm just glad I didn't run into one of them.
Well, my neighbor down the road claimed he was going across the road, and he saw one deer running across the road in front of him. So he came to a complete stop, and in the interim, about 15 deer ran into the right to the side of his van. I mean, he was not even moving. And boom, 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 boom. Here they come. I mean, you know, that ain't right.
Yeah, well, if you see one deer, you should be aware that there will be more. And, yeah, if you're sitting still, though, they're, you know.
I mean, they run right in the side of your van. I mean, like that's weird.
Larry.
Yes.
Hey, thanks for giving us an update on Estes Park not burning down, because I was kind of wondering about that. I know there's a lot of fires out there. I don't know where everything's located. I've kind of like grown to like Estes Park, although I've never been there, just because times you've talked about Estes Park.
I tell you right now, you guys should go. You should go, stay at McGregor Mountain Lodge, I'm sure, because he's one of our underwriters. He'll be more than happy to cut you a deal. You definitely need to go, because the first time that Cheryl went out, in fact, we went out on our honeymoon, she wanted to move there like the next day. I mean, it is the most unbelievable country.
You know what we ought to do? We ought to plan a live show from Estes Park, Colorado.
Oh, gosh.
Wouldn't that be a good idea?
Well, Technically, we've done that. We've had Michael Hodges and Igloo Ed on a few times. But I like your idea.
There's critters out there we don't have over here, so I'd like to actually see some of them.
Oh, I tell you, it's phenomenal. The bighorn sheep and elk and moose and black bears and cougars and bobcats and badgers. Gosh, what else? I could go on and on.
Badgers. I was married once. I had one of those.
You did?
Yeah, she was a badger. Not Melissa, of course. I'm not talking.
No, I know that. I realize. You know, I had a couple badgers we used as school lecture animals, and we had for a number of years. In fact, we had them on the Carson show, Johnny Carson for the young folks, the Tonight Show. And they were absolutely fantastic. I mean, they were really great animals. But what was funny is we had received a phone call one day from a gal, and she said, I've got this weird dog over here by my patio. Would someone be willing to come over and take care of it? And I told her, well, ma'am, you need to call the dog pound where we deal with exotic animals. So I don't know, a half hour later, the game warden calls me up and he says, Larry, he says, we have a badger here at Speedway. This is the suburbs. Apparently there'd been some construction in there and it had been driven out of that area and ended up in this woman's backyard. He says, we've got six guys here, three game wardens, and not one of them want to mess with it. They call us. So he says, oh, okay. So we head over there, and Badger, he set up camp underneath this bush next to this woman's garage, and we're kind of surveying the situation and what they had done, which is pretty smart, is they completely surrounded the Badger with 4x8 sheets of plywood, and they were standing, the guys were standing holding up the plywood to keep, so the Badger wouldn't wander off. So what we did is we had one of those animal snares, a steel wire snare, and we were lucky. The first time we attempted to get that thing, we had it. And so we got a hold of it, and the Badger's, you know, he's fighting and raising hell and kicking up dirt. And the gal hollers from the porch. She goes, don't hurt it. And I looked around. I thought, ma'am. I said, these things will take on grizzly bears. There is no way we can hurt this badger. They've got so much fat on their body that if they're bitten by a rattlesnake, the venom has no effect at all.
Yeah, right.
So we end up, we get it put in a crate, and we haul it out of there. And, of course, the newspaper, they want to take a bunch of pictures of it. And I told them, I said, we don't really want to take pictures of this poor badger in the crate. I said, come over to my place. We've got two badgers that are real nice, and we'll just put them out in the woods, and you can take all the pictures you want. So that's what we ended up doing. But what was funny is that the wildlife biologist for the state of Indiana, he had never seen a live badger before from Indiana. And he picked it up, and he was going to take it down and release it in southern Indiana along White River. And he said it took him about 3 days before they finally got down there. And by that time, the badger was breaking the welds on the airline crate that we put it in, which is pretty impressive in its own right. And he said when he opened the door to that crate, he says, you would have thought that badger would have bolted for the underbrush. He said, nah, he says, he just walked out of that crate, took about 3 steps out of that crate, turned around, looked at him, went, huh, and proceeded to take his own time as he walked right down the middle of that fire road. I thought, my Lord, that's a tough customer, I'll tell you what.
Yeah, now the badger story I always tell is about your two badgers, and I was helping you with a show on one of your school programs, and you said, go out and load up a badger for the show, and I'm like, I can't tell them apart. One of them's mean, one of them's nice, and I can't tell them apart, and you said, well, just grab one, and you'll know right away.
Yeah, you did, didn't you, Dr. Day?
Yep.
I tell you what, I've watched a lot of those critters in the badger family. They're all just mean, ornery, aggressive little dudes, and they're tough. They're all tough as nails.
Oh, they're in the weasel family, which is includes wolverines, mink, all your weasels, your ferrets. There's the old story about there was an article written, I think it was in National Geographic, about mink, and this mink farmer told at the time about how one of his mink had escaped. He was out looking for it, and he found it, and it was stalking a cow. There was a little bitty mink thinking that he was going to take down this big old cow. That's what you're dealing with there. This is Larry Batson. We're having fun tonight, everybody, with Wayne Larson and Dr. Henry Day. We're going to take a short break. You're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Gosh, Johnny, playing in the cave sure is neat.
Oh, boy, a kitty cat.
Sassy, the kitty cat's yelling.
What, Sassy? It's not a kitty? It's a bobcat? Speaking of cats, you like to stress the importance of adopting cats from animal shelters? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year? And with millions of healthy cats to choose from, it's a shame more people don't adopt from shelters?
This bobcat's heavy. Help, Sassy!
Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow?
What's that supposed to mean? Oh, nuts.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest, near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
Hello, everyone. This is Larry Batson. You are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio as we're just chatting tonight. So I hope you're enjoying the show. We're having a great time. We want to remind everyone that you can download all of our broadcasts, including tonight, absolutely free of charge at Blog Talk Radio. I think the easiest way to do that, just Google Larry Batson, B-A-T-T-S-O-N, Wild World, and it will come right up, and you can see all the different shows that we've had. Gosh, for almost 3 years, we've had the opportunity and the pleasure to bring these shows to you with lots of great guests. In fact, I have to say I was quite amazed yesterday. Our good friend from the show, Al Jardine of the Beach Boys, it was all Beach Boys on VH1 Classic, so I enjoyed seeing our good buddy, and he's going to be back on the show as soon as they finish up this tour that they're on for the 50th anniversary of the Beach Boys, so we're looking forward to that. We'd also like to thank Tire Service Plus and owner Jerry Jones, taking care of America's auto maintenance needs. They keep our animal truck on the road, traveling thousands of miles with our wild animal ambassadors. Give them a call at 317-243-0700. Also, the iKids Fishing, the first kids fishing show in the USA, starring kids teaching kids how to fish. 40 million fishermen spending $45 billion a year. The iKids Fishing Show is a real keeper. More info at We Want You Cottages at Chautauqua Lake in Western New York at www.wewanchu.com. It's one of America's finest fishing resorts. And also be sure that you check the link out for the Chautauqua Lake Bigfoot Expo. You can still purchase the live stream. Well, it's not live now, but it's 6 hours of lectures and all the things, the activities that happen at the Bigfoot Expo the 1st of May. For only $3.99, we encourage you to do so. Also available, all sorts of souvenir T-shirts from the event, and we've been told that it's on again for next year, so we look forward to that. It's a Chautauqua Lake Bigfoot Expo. We'd also like to thank all of our individual underwriters. They support us. Go to my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com. Contact me through there, and we'll tell you how easy it is to be an individual underwriter. We do appreciate that. Makes it possible for all these broadcasts to be on every Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Those are a few of our underwriters that make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
Well, now take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not get a bite all day, but don't you rush away. What a great place to rest your bones, and mighty fine for skipping stones. You feel fresh as a lemonade, setting in the shade. Weather is hot, weather is cool. Oh, what a spot, always been like a fool. What a fine day to take a stroll and wander by the fishing hole. I can't think of a better way to pass the time of day.
Well, it's a sad week in the entertainment world, and gosh, Hollywood icon, gentleman who I grew up watching his shows, my parents, and you just can't, once it started, you just cannot bring yourself to walk away from an episode of The Andy Griffith Show and the passing of Andy Griffith, and gosh, all sorts of wonderful memories with Andy and Don Knotts and Ron Howard. What a show it was. Do you have a favorite memory, Dr. Day, of old Andy Griffith?
Oh, boy, there's a lot. I always used to love it when Ron Howard's little brother was on, Clint.
Yeah.
He always had a peanut butter jelly sandwich. And he didn't really ever talk, but he'd offer his peanut butter and jelly sandwich to whoever was standing there.
That was your favorite moment.
Yeah, one of the, just all the characters on the show. Everybody had their own personality, and you just learned to love them all.
You did. Of course, there was the one episode where Opie had killed the mother bird with a slingshot, and he raised the babies, and boy, what a tearjerker that was. Or the one where, what was the guy that come in and throw the rocks?
Ernest T. Bass.
Ernest T. Bass, and if I'm not mistaken, his goat ate a box of nitroglycerin.
Dynamite, yeah.
And there was this goat running around through Mayberry, and they're afraid it's going to blow at any minute. Oh, my gosh. It's so, and, when, Don Knotts, man, you talk about, Andy was a straight man, but, gosh, the way the two of them worked together was just phenomenal. Gosh, just great.
And every time you heard that theme song, the old fishing hole. And my grandfather always used to say, I've got worms, but I'm going fishing anyway.
Yes, he did. Do you have a favorite fishing story, Dr. Day? Now, we know Melissa Hubby has become the fishing addict. She just cannot go fishing enough now. She's Wayne Larson has shown her the world of casting and being a master angler, and she's going for it.
Well, I have several fun fishing stories. Well, one of my favorites, I guess, is I was living in Tampa and was fishing off of the old Gandy Bridge, and when I hooked into a pretty good-sized fish, and I fought it for about 15 minutes before I finally got it to shore, and it turned out to be a boot. And the boot had been in the water so long it had barnacles all over it, and it was quite the lovely piece. Well, when I pulled it ashore, there were two crabs living in it.
You destroyed a whole ecosystem.
Yes, I did, and unfortunately, I kicked the crabs out, and the boot was so lovely, I took it home.
Wow.
Another time I was fishing with my Uncle Wolf at Tonganoxie Lake in Kansas. And Tonganoxie was part of an Indian reservation there. Anyway, we're out in the boat fishing with my cousins, and I hook into something, and we're fishing for crappie. So I figure, yeah, it's a pretty good-sized crappie. And I couldn't get it in the boat. It swam all around the boat. Spent another 8-10 minutes trying to get this fish in. Well, that one turned out to be a rock. Yeah.
Well, I never knew.
It actually swam around the boat, yeah.
The rock did.
And on that same trip, my cousin Matthew, we had seagulls flying over the boat, and he said to his father Wolf, he said, "Dad, can I catch that seagull?" And Wolf said, "Well, sure, go ahead." So he literally cast into the air and wound that seagull in to the boat, and we had to untangle it and turn him loose.
That's the dumbest story I've ever heard.
Dumb but true.
You're right, Larry. Melissa's become quite the fisher person.
Yeah.
She's like a kid in a candy store out there. But a matter of fact, this last week here, she managed to reel in a 30-inch channel cat, and it was quite the catch. It was a good 10-pound cat. She enjoyed it, and she bounced up and down the whole time on the shore while she was reeling this thing in. And
that's a battle.
It was amazing, man. It was amazing. That was a big fish. That was a big fish.
And she caught it on a brand-new rod and reel.
Yeah, she did.
My Lord.
She's got it going on. She's putting worms on now by herself, and as soon as I can get her to take fish off, I'll be in there.
Yeah.
I'll be good to go. Actually, sit down and relax and fish and relaxation.
Oh.
Has she been horned by a catfish yet?
Not yet, no. No, she won't grab a hold of them yet.
She's
kind of backed off that, but I'll get her to that point. She'll get a thorn here before long. Because she likes it. She's enjoying it. She's into it. She's into the whole thing. When these guys start hitting, it's constantly busy. I don't even have time to sit down and relax hardly sometimes.
Before
we got another fish on, and I got to deal with that. It's pretty fun though. You guys want to catch some catfish coming up here? I'll take you right to the place where they're at.
Wow, that's she's become a fishing addict. In fact, when Benny Williams is back on, I won't get a word in edgewise because, you know, Benny Williams is the U.S. Department of Fisheries, so
right.
She'll have to talk to him.
You might as well just turn the show over to her and let her talk.
What I'm thinking. Yeah. Between her and Benny, they'll do a battle of airwaves.
Right.
My favorite fishing story is I had friends that made the terrible mistake of deciding that they wanted me to go along with them on their vacation up to Michigan, and not realizing that most of the time while I am on vacation, my constant thoughts are how to pull a practical joke on somebody. So what had happened is their dad, his name is Hap, had bought a brand new Zebco rod and reel, and he just loved that rod and reel. And so one day earlier in the day, we were walking along this beautiful lake in Michigan, and I looked down on the ground, and here was somebody had apparently broken their fishing rod because about 10 inches of the rod tip was just laying there on the shore. So I picked that up, and I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking, well, this definitely can be put to some good use. So that night, we were roasting marshmallows at the campfire, and so I grabbed Hap's brand new rod and reel, and I took out the tip of it, took it off, and that one I found along the creek or along the lake, I'd put in the end of his brand new rod and reel, and proceeded to put a couple marshmallows on it, and I told his youngest son, I said, "Go up there and roast these marshmallows." So he's up there roasting those marshmallows, and old Hap's sitting there, and he's looking. He says, "Boy, I should do want to have me some marshmallows. Those look good." He says, "Make sure, Moggy, you give me one of them." So I'm looking, and Hap looks over again, and he finally looks, and he realizes that Moggy was using his brand new rod and reel to cook marshmallows. Oh my God, if I'd had a video. As soon as he got up, started screaming, chasing that poor child around the fire. It was like it was one humorous moment after another. But it was definitely great entertainment. And they never invited me again to go on a vacation with them ever again that I can remember. We just made it just terrible for them the whole time. But anyway. But we got to love the fishing. You know, I can still remember when I first got the fishing bug. I think I went fishing every day for the entire summer. And we went to Canada. We went to Michigan. We went to Colorado fishing. We were ate up with the fishing bug, I'll tell you. It was phenomenal.
I was the same when I was growing up. Went fishing every opportunity.
But then we found, well, then I discovered the love and excitement of going snake collecting. And fishing just didn't appeal to me as much anymore.
Yeah, my mother wishes that I didn't collect snakes when I was growing up. One time I had 40 garter snakes get loose in the basement. She was not happy. For months she was, there's one under a bucket down there, go get it.
Oh my.
Yeah, 40 at one time. Then there was
time. Go ahead.
I had the praying mantis cocoons. I had like 40 praying mantis cocoons hatch out in February.
Mm-hmm.
I had relocated them too close to the furnace.
Yeah.
There were millions of baby praying mantises all over the house. Mother was happy
cool.
about that too. Yeah.
Oh, you got in trouble?
Yeah. And then there was the time she found my bird egg collection by smell.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's bad. That's really... Well, I can remember once I got a shipment of from the airport of 50 Canadian garter snakes from Manitoba. And I brought them back to my apartment, and I put them in this cage, which I thought was pretty secure. Proceeded to go off to the grocery or some errand. I come back, and the patio door, which got this beautiful sunlight every day, there's about 30 of them out there sunning themselves in the living room through the beautiful sunlight that went through the patio door. So I'm like going, oh my gosh, I'm going to be single again. So I had to run through my apartment and catch, and I counted 50 garter snakes. And they were everywhere, I mean. And I think that I caught them all, I think. It was not good.
But what a lovely sight.
It was a lovely sight. And then there was the time that I'd gotten in these African emperor scorpions. And people that are not familiar with them, they're one of the largest scorpions in the world. They're black in color. And I proceeded to put them in an aquarium that did not have a screen top, assured myself that there's no way that the scorpions could ever escape from that enclosure. So I'd put them up, and I'd taken off and gone somewhere and come back, and the only thing I can say is the person that I was roommates with at that time was sitting at the kitchen table, had all the cats on the table, their feet off the table, and the first question they had was, how in the blank did all those scorpions escape? So I had to I guess they were going through the laundry and picked up a pair of boxer briefs, and there was one of these giant scorpions underneath it. So I don't know what. 6 months later, my roommate left.
And
I don't know why.
They're such good hiders, too.
Oh, well, I found them all, too. I got pretty good at finding stuff I'd let go. You know, after a while, you get sort of a knack for it. That's probably why there's so many laws now. But, yeah, I tell you, it was wacky, just wacky.
Okay,
today.
something. Wayne,
you have a horror story for us?
And Melissa has something she wants to discuss here.
Okay.
Uh-oh. I'm afraid now.
I don't know if it's so much discuss. No, I'm just sitting here listening to you guys talk about, you know, about fishing. And, yeah, I mean, it's, for me, it's been a lot of fun. And
yeah,
basically, I just want to put out a message to all the other women out there who don't understand why their men want to go off fishing. Let me tell you, girls, they're keeping a big secret from you. It's great. I love it. Yeah, I'm baiting my own hook and messing with worms and stuff like that, but it's so peaceful. There's not people yelling and screaming. You got no kids bugging you. At night, you watch the moon on the water. It's just absolutely gorgeous. And when that fish bites your line, well, you know you've accomplished something when you get that fish in on the side of the bank. Trust me. It's just an overwhelming experience. So these guys are hiding a big, yeah, these guys are hiding a big secret from you, and you need to talk your men into taking you so you can see what it's like, because that it is, it's awesome. It's just, there's no words for it. It's just awesome.
I think it's the excitement of not knowing what's on the end of that line. You just see the line move through the water.
Yeah.
You know when you got a big catfish on there, because that thing it'll run hard to the left, it'll run hard to the right. You know it's big because you can tell it's pulling out drag, but you don't know how big it is until you get them up to shore. And you really, it's great. And this is the first time this year that I've been back fishing for a long time, believe me. And I'm glad Melissa got me back into this, because I forgot what I was missing. I forgot what I enjoyed about the whole thing. And just having a big fish on the end of your pole is exhilarating, because you don't know how big he is, especially when you go with the, you know, the smaller test line, and you know there's fish out there that are big enough to bust that test line. And you know you got to be careful and you got to be ginger, and it's a challenge. You want it to be a challenge.
Oh, I agree.
It's a lot of fun.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. Well, we had a great time. When we went to South Carolina at the Santee Cooper Lakes, and you catch catfish anywhere from 10 to 100 pounds. I mean.
Wow.
Oh, and your fishing guide tells you when that pole jerks violently, you yank it as hard as you can.
Yep.
And we'd watch it just barely wiggle. That was just waves. They were just testing us.
And a little tiny.
But when that pole, the end of that tip would dip to the water, and my gosh. And we were catching some big ones. I think we caught 15, 20 pounders.
That's what I want right there.
But those weren't, you know, like the guide says. He says, well, fishing ain't that great. Usually bring in a couple 30s. Oh, Jesus Christ. We had more fish than we could eat. In fact, what we ended up doing, they were going to have a fish fry for a charity down there. And we said, hey, you're welcome to ours, because we got to drive all the way back to Indiana. There's no way we can clean these.
Right.
And
we've already got a lot of fish in the freezer, and I know she wants more to put in the freezer so we can eat on these things, you know, during the winter. But
sure.
I'm already figuring it out. She's learning the difference between these. We got a lot of little white perch up here that like to steal your bait. But
yeah,
you can tell the difference in the way they're hitting the line. It's just this, you know, there's a difference between that little tiny fish trying to feed on it and that big animal just trying to jerk your pole in the water. But she's figuring it out. She can set the hook, and she can set the hook to where these guys aren't swallowing it. It's in the lip. You know, it's easy to get out. Because you know how catfish are. They're infamous for just swallowing everything.
Mm-hmm.
She's doing a fine job.
And they are the toughest fish to clean.
She's
do you nail them to a tree?
Out of that, too. She's matter of fact, the last batch we had, she cleaned on her own.
Oh, my Lord.
I posted a few videos and some pictures, and I said, right on camera, I said, you know, if she wanted to do this on her own, I didn't tell her to do this. Of course, she handed me the knife, like, get in there and clean this damn thing. But she did it. She did it. She did a knockout job.
Well, there's always the famous fishing. Me and three or four other friends went up to Ontario, Canada. We drove. We drove up as far as the roads would permit us, and we found an isolated lake. And we were told we were 200 miles south of the tundra. That's how far we drove up. And we'd catch northerns, we'd catch walleyes. Well, we were told by the locals that you had to take the fish remnants after you'd filleted them to an island. So we're going, really? Because what we'd do is we'd just dump them in the woods, and every night we'd have to fight off the bears. So we decided that was losing its fun. So we're in the boat one night, and I've got all these fish I'd filleted, and we're heading toward the island. It's pitch black. We get about halfway across that water, and I'm saying, screw this. Let's just dump them in the water. So we did. All those fish we'd filleted, we just dumped them. So the next day we go fishing, and we do pretty good. We'd catch, catch northern pike every day. I think you could take a can opener, put a hook on it, and catch northern. So we caught a bunch of fish that day, and that night I'm filleting these fish. And, one of those fish, because I recognized it, that I had dumped into the water the night before, was in the gut of one of those northerns I was filleting. Now, what is the chances of that happening?
Yeah.
And that's no fish story. That's the absolute truth. I mean, that was wacky. But we sure had a good time. We fed a lot of mosquitoes up there. It's a great place to go fishing, but the mosquitoes are about a pound apiece, and they're everywhere, and they don't wait till night to come out. They're out there during the daytime.
Yeah, they're about the size of hummingbirds up there, aren't they?
Yeah, and then when you sleep on the ground, you got the sand flies on the ground and the mosquitoes out. But that's, and then we were told we'd bought every type of insect repellent, nothing worked. But we got to watching the Indians up there, and they never swatted at mosquitoes. So we started talking to them, and they said, you must smell like environment. So that meant no baths, no showers,
right,
hanging over the fire,
right,
gets good and smoky. And they were right. Once we become pretty ripe, the mosquitoes left us alone.
You all left each other alone.
Yeah. Absolutely. It was like, I could do a whole show about that trip. The float plane guy, the kids from Connecticut that came by on a canoe trip that we got drunk, and oh, my Lord, it was a trip.
You got drunk with kids from Connecticut on a canoe trip? Is that what you said?
Yeah. We'd,
okay.
We were sitting there in our campsite one night. That was the same day that a float plane crash landed on our lake, and it was tied up in the trees. And the guy I was with was trying to decide if he knew how to fly a plane. He wanted to go trolling with it in the lake. It looked like a Volkswagen as far as control systems were in the plane. About that time, here come about eight canoes filled with these rich kids from Connecticut that were on an 8-week canoe trip. And there was 40 of these kids, and they paid $1,000 a piece to go on this canoe trip, and they absolutely hated it, and they hated the counselors. And if there's any way for them to go back home to Connecticut, they wouldn't, but they were stuck in the wilds of Ontario. So we said, well, that's a lot of their... We said, gosh, the counselors are making $40,000 off of you guys. They never really thought of it that way. So we had to go into town and get some supplies, so they asked if we'd buy them some beer. So one of the guys said, yeah, why not? So we bought them beer, and a 12-pack got all 40 of them wasted. And they came back, and when the counselors came back with provisions, the kids were a little inebriated. So needless to say, they were giving the counselors a piece of their mind and what they thought of the trip. And that next day was supposed to be a day off, but about 6 that morning we could hear them tearing down the camp and moving on. It was wacky. Don't tell that story to your children, everybody. Well, it's been a great program. This is fun every once in a while. Just get just to chat, Wayne and Melissa and Dr. Day and myself.
We don't get to do that very often.
No, we don't. We are so sorry for Dee Dee Sharp and her loss and her family. Her grandfather passed away. I guess he just sat down in a chair, went to sleep, and that was it. He was in his late 80s, but, man, I tell you, if you're going to go, what a way to go. I think that's, you know. So she's going to be with us in a couple weeks, and Wayne will have a chance to listen to that whole music bed, so save that. Next week on our show, Benny Williams will be with us. We're going to talk fishing. And have a great week, everybody. You've been listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Good night.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.